Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to go ahead and call a meeting to order. We have some administrative housekeeping matters to talk to at the beginning, so that'll give us an opportunity. We can maybe take a break here in a minute and see if Tommy, Commissioner May or Commissioner Zimmerman are going to join in. If we could, I'll call the meeting to order, and would you please call roll?
Chairman Banks.
Here.
Jonathan Rogers.
Here.
Clark Smith.
Here.
Philip Fletcher.
Here.
Justice Tuck.
Here.
Tommy May. And Jan Zimmerman.
Thank you. We have a quorum present, so what I'd like to do at the beginning is to have a little short visit. First off, I'd like to welcome Clark Smith, our newest commissioner, to this commission. And if you don't mind, I'm going to ask these other commissioners to, since you probably hadn't had a time to do any homework, just to say hi to you and tell you who they are and what they do, and then you tell us a little something about yourself so we can get acquainted here. That work for you?
Yes, sir.
I'm Chuck Banks. I have the privilege of being the chairman of this commission, and I'm a lawyer. I'm originally from East Arkansas, but I've lived here in Pulaski County in Little Rock for the last 25, 26 years. I don't have any special expertise. I'm just another citizen like the rest of these good folks on this commission and like you. I especially don't have any as a lawyer as it pertains to the work at hand for this commission. So I'm tickled to death that you're on board, and I think you'll enjoy what you're doing. And I know that everybody that I'm serving with on this commission are certainly pleased to have the opportunity to be citizens here on this Independent Citizens Commission. So, Philip?
Remember to use your microphones, please.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Philip Fletcher. I've lived in Bentonville, Arkansas all my life, or in the surrounding area, and I own a construction company about 35 years now. Serve on the Arvest Bank Board for Benton County. We do a lot of work for Walmart and all the local contractors in Bentonville area. My wife and I live actually west of Bentonville, about 10 miles on the farm. We're in the cattle business, so that shows how weaker-minded we are. So other than that, we appreciate you coming on board and look forward to a good meeting.
Yes, sir.
Jonathan, you go ahead next. Thank you.
I'm Jonathan Rogers. We walked in here. I'm an electrical contractor, so I have an electric company in the state I was working with, west, northeast. Here we don't make a deal very much, but anyway. So, yeah, we're working on here. I think this is my second year. And pleasure meeting you. So.
My name is Annabelle Emmer Tuck, and I'm here by appointment of the Chief Justice of the Arkansas Supreme Court. I served on the court for over 13 years and then was a trial judge before that. So I'm here, I'm a volunteer, and just bring my experience to it just like everybody else does. Okay. Thank you.
Clark, you know.
Clark Smith from El Dorado. I guess I'm in the oil business. I work for a refinery in Smackover, Arkansas. I've been living in El Dorado and working for the refinery for about 30 years. My wife and I are there. We've got two sons who are students. One's graduated from the University of Arkansas, and the other is a junior at the University of Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we're temporary Razorback fans while they're in college, because we both went to attended UCA. So so like you all, here to volunteer, here to serve, and glad to be on the committee.
Is El Dorado your home originally? Is that where you're from?
I actually graduated from Smackover High School.
All right.
And after college, I thought, I put in about 3 years and leave, and I haven't left yet. So I live over in down in El Dorado, but work in Smackover every day.
And I got to see if I remember this correctly. Smackover or the Buckaroos? Is
that's
that,
it.
Yeah,
that's
all
it.
Right. I remember that. That's a unique name.
Yeah.
So thank you. Has Jan called in, Commissioner Zimmerman called in yet? Obviously, Tommy has not called in. Okay, I want to say, I'm sorry? All right. I want to say thank you to Donna Kerr, for the good work she's been doing with us over the past month or 2 months. Sorry that Melanie's been pulled aside for other duties, but she's been brought back today, and she's going to be doing her thing, and we really appreciate all the hard work that she's done over the past, well, even last commission. So we really appreciate you. How about the folks out there in the audience? Anybody want to go ahead and tell us who you are? We're going to do a few other preliminaries, and then we're going to start letting folks talk to us. Am I putting anybody on the spot? All right, good enough. My right arm, Jody Veit, is here with us today. Edrington is her last name. I got stumped there. All right, let's do this. Has everyone had an opportunity to read the minutes of the last meeting? Are there any additions or corrections? I'll entertain a motion that they be approved as read.
A second.
That is unanimous. So we now have the opportunity to, is Mr. Garrity here yet? From?
That would be Ms. Garrity.
Oh, okay, hey.
Sorry.
So it's Ms. Garrity?
Ms. Garrity.
I'm sorry, I should have known that. When you get my age, those types of mistakes are going to be made. You know?
Thank you for your apology. I'm Marty Garrity. I'm the director of the Bureau of Legislative Research. Before you, you should have some information that I sent to Don. The Bureau was requested to pull up legislative compensation for members of the General Assembly and then the judicial branch. For the states of Arkansas, Iowa, Louisiana, Missouri, Oklahoma, and Tennessee. As you can see, we've laid it out in the information both in front of you. This includes their status as full-time or part-time, the amount that they get for mileage reimbursements, the per diem that each member gets, and then their salary. This is looking at legislative compensation. On the second page, that information from the same states for retirement benefits, and then third page is legislative insurance benefits. On the second document, that's for the judicial positions, and again, this is information here for those states. There were a couple that we couldn't get, they never responded back to us. But again, per diem, travel reimbursement, benefits, and then their salaries. I'd be more than happy to take any questions you have regarding this information.
Okay, the states you were not able to get were?
If you look at the judicial, it looks like we weren't able to get, I believe, from Tennessee. And
we got Missouri and
Louisiana. We had a hard time. We couldn't get any information back from them.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Most of this information was pulled from for the state legislatures, from NCSL, the National Conference of State Legislatures, and then the judiciary, there's a national judicial organization that we pull that same information from there. But we did have to follow up with some states in particular with regards to the judicial branch.
So I see that you were able to get the last page is table two salary comparison for all the constitutional officers, legislative positions for all of the states. So you were able to get make a comparison of compensation.
Yes, with regards to, it's easier for the legislative branch because most of that information is on the National Conference of State Legislatures website. When it came to the retirement benefits, Louisiana showed that there was no retirement plan available. But most of that information for the legislative branch is available very easily, actually.
The very last page of the document, the salary comparison, is it a little bit older comparison?
2014.
Yes. That's the, is that on for the judicial?
Yeah. No,
it's actually got all of them.
All of them. On the very last page.
Of judicial or legislative compensation?
No, of your packet.
Well, maybe your packet.
Oh, with two separate, yes.
Or this page 12. And maybe you don't have those pages. It's table two salary comparison.
I don't know that. I'm sorry, I don't have that with me. My apologies. Do you have an extra packet?
I think we have an extra. This is 2014, so I'm not sure what the salaries are currently for constitutional officers, but based upon this, it looks like our governor has paid the least of all the states.
Here's the middle.
Okay, where's the, oh, here it is.
It was the additional,
yeah.
It's just pretty well done since that day. I think that happened a few years ago.
Yeah.
This commission was created, all that stuff.
All that was corrected, yeah. If I read this taken from the 2020 Book of States, it looks like, of course, our lieutenant governor, I'm interested in hearing about our lieutenant governor position and the duties and everything, because it's so the salary is so vastly different than the other states. I'm not sure if the duties are less and that's the reason. But it looks pretty clear that our Secretary of State is paid less than any of the other states. Our AG kind of is in line. The Treasurer is paid less, as well as the auditor. I'm really interested in hearing about the duties of all these officers so that I can be more knowledgeable about it, because obviously we all live in our own silos with knowing what we do but not what anybody else does.
Absolutely, I understand, and I would, certainly, I think that information regarding their duties probably needs to come from the individual
absolutely
officers.
Absolutely, and I understand that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So all of these that were our comparisons are part-time legislatures.
Yes, that was the list we were given.
Yeah.
I think most states are part-time legislatures.
Yeah, I assumed that, but I didn't want to be sure. In your comparison of additional compensation, all of these states have additional compensation for certain things, and the only compensation Arkansas has is for the president pro tem and the presiding officer. I presume that our legislators, if they have expenses related to, how does that work? If they have expenses related to their duties, how do they get reimbursed?
I'm going to leave that up to the House and the Senate.
Okay.
I believe, I would take a guess, but I'm looking through Bernie and Roy, yeah, that they would claim that on their taxes as
As business expense.
As business expense.
Okay.
But again, I would defer to that.
Okay. It looks like Louisiana, Missouri has to pay their staff out of the budget, the Senate. Yeah, I'm interested because there's a real difference there.
And in Arkansas, members don't have individual staff.
Right. It's okay.
Gary, thank you for your good work and a lot of it. I don't mean this question to sound too minute, but I'm wondering if you take in the page one of legislative compensation and you take all these total salary figures on the far right, if you combine that in, I don't see it in here, but if you combine that in with the different benefits, the per diems, the reimbursements, the mileages, or anything else by way of compensation for legislators, House or Senate, is there such a figure there that just simplifies it, that says this is what they make given the normal circumstances, not necessarily a special session, but a regular session too?
I think that would be difficult, only because it's, you know, it varies by member here in Arkansas.
Sorry,
it varies here in Arkansas depending on member. You know, if someone from who lives in Bentonville is going to receive
right.
more mileage than a member who lives in Pine Bluff. A member who is on the AOC subcommittees, who has to attend more meetings in the interim, will receive more reimbursement in that method than a member who isn't. And so, to be able to look and determine that other states, you know, how they, you know, the amount of reimbursement that they get, even the salaries for, you know, I think it was Louisiana, you know, that's a minimum.
beginning at 2,700 for, you know, salaries for their staff, it may be more. We don't know. It'd be difficult to make that comparison without doing an extensive deep dive into, you know, each state.
So given the discrepancies that you just described about different states, different mileage, different person coming from Bentonville versus Lone Oak, this is the best or the closest that we can do for information from this commission to be able to make thorough judgments about whether to assess more or less salary or how to handle that. Is that really a simple way of putting it?
I think so. And I would remind you all, and I know that you know this, but when you're looking at mileage and per diem reimbursement, that's a reimbursement for their expenses.
Right.
So that's not taxable income because it's considered a wash. So, you know, when you look at per diem and mileage, that's not what you would consider income to the members. Right. So that's something to think about,
okay,
too, as you look at their salaries, that, you know, someone coming from Bentonville, you know, they're going to get reimbursed more for mileage because their expenses are more for mileage.
This is my last question, and again, thank you for this. Do you know of anything else that this commission could do within reason that could answer any other questions about how to properly have the information of what legislators are being paid in full by way of real dollar income, other than try to go out on some search mission, which we're not here to do that. We're information gathering. That's all this is, information gathering.
Absolutely. So I probably should have started by talking about the Bureau and our role. We serve, you know, the members of the General Assembly. We are nonpartisan, and part of that is we don't provide recommendations, and we don't, it's our job, and you know, we're pretty steadfast in not offering options to members, and I'm going to, you know, take that to this body. That's not the role of the Bureau. We're here to provide information, and so I'm not able to answer that question.
And there's not any other state agency that assumes such a role to be able to answer that question?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. Thank you very
much. Your staff may be able to, the auditor staff may be able to take that role, but the Bureau cannot.
Again, thank you very much for your time and expertise.
I just have one more question, and maybe this has changed. Maybe statutorily it's changed since I was familiar with it. The Supreme Court used to, I mean, the Court of Appeals has districts just like legislative districts, and so they can be reimbursed for their travel to and from Little Rock. Mm-hmm. Is that true also now in the Supreme Court? Because the Supreme Court runs statewide.
I'm not sure. Let me follow up with you.
Okay.
I'll get that information
so
on.
It could have been changed. I knew there was a big discussion about that because, you know, obviously Supreme Court justices live in different parts of the state, but because it was statewide, they made a distinction originally, and I just wondered if it was still the case that Supreme Court justices do not get reimbursed for travel to Little Rock.
Let me follow up, and okay, I'll relay that information to the
okay
email.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Are there any questions from any other commissioners?
I've got one question, just so that I'm crystal clear.
Sure.
You know, excluding committee chairs, vice chairs, and sub-chairs, the only salary for legislative compensation is the annual salary, and the mileage is just considered reimbursement, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Any others? Thank you so much.
Thank
appreciate
you.
It. The next item on the agenda is commission discussion duties for Supreme Court judges, Court of Appeal judges, circuit and district judges, and their caseload statistics. Is Dr. Scott Graves here? Yes. Hey, how are you, Doctor? Come on. Thank you.
Good morning, all.
Good morning.
Director Sullivan extends his apologies for not being able to attend today. We actually have an agency-wide, the ASC has an agency-wide meeting today, and we're getting it right around now, actually. So since I'm not addressing the crowd or introducing the Chief Justice, I'm here instead.
You're welcome to get closer if you want to.
I'll follow up. A couple weeks ago, Director Sullivan asked me to collect caseload statistics for all the levels of the court, Supreme Court, Courts of Appeals, Circuit Courts, and District Courts for the last few years, which I sent to him, as well as the annual reports. Those figures came from our annual reports. I've reproduced those.
We have those.
Well, oh. I've actually added something. So.
Okay, good.
Yeah. He asked for the last few years, so I gave them by report year.
Yeah.
So the figures that I had given as 2020 were actually for the calendar year 2019, but they appeared in the 2020 report. Yeah. Our 2020 numbers are still preliminary. Usually we produce the numbers for the annual report right around this time of the year, so it'd be sometime in the month of November or early December. But I provided the 2020 figures, our preliminary numbers from the summer there, so that extends what you had earlier a little bit, and also properly attributes them to the year in which the caseload actually occurred.
Okay. Well, I noticed 2020 went down considerably, and I presume that was because of the pandemic.
Yes. Yeah. National Center for State Courts, who my previous employer, has been tracking the effects of the pandemic both on case filings and on case dispositions, and Arkansas is certainly well within trends nationwide in seeing a dip in both filings and dispositions as activity slows down, fewer people on the road, less economic activity. Also, a moratoria on in-person hearings, trials, things like that has slowed dispositions as well. So, yeah, this is our, so Arkansas's dip there is very much within national trends.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm looking here at the other years before that, and it looks like the circuit courts maintained pretty evenly. The district courts went up a little bit, but the appellate court load decreased before the pandemic somewhat. Now in dispositions, we have the same pattern. Of course, you know, that is all controlled by who appeals.
Yes.
And it's not something courts control other than who appeals.
Yeah, the pending caseloads for the Supreme Court and the Court of Appeals have remained fairly steady since 2017. Uh-huh. You may notice that the disposition rate for the Supreme Court jumped in 2017 as the court cleaned up a substantial amount of the pending, there was a substantial pending criminal writ docket and civil review docket. They did a lot of house cleaning that year.
Yeah.
The pending cases at the beginning of that year were, I think, over twice the annual caseload, and now they've they're now below, so they're in the 200, 300 range, whereas they were above 700 before. So it's, it's a little bit of catching up, and since then it's been steady sale.
Do you know if they're counting as individual cases? You talked about the writ stuff, but what I call the post-conviction relief cases? As individual cases, you know, I'm talking about the Rule 37.
Yeah, Rule 37, 375, yeah.
Right.
We do attempt to count those. Those are our statistical reopens, but in practice, they're not reopened statistically consistently. So I can't say that body of caseload is represented accurately.
So this number might not be totally representative of the workload.
No, it's likely not. Particularly with regard to reopens, there's probably some dark matter there, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, we always, when I was on the court, we always had an interesting discussion about what constituted a new case for statistical purposes as opposed to a reopen, which doesn't count. And I know in the dependency neglect area, and you know, there's a lot of reopens. And that also, so the only reason I'm asking these questions of you is to let my colleagues know that the numbers may be a little lower than actual workload.
Yeah, that's likely true.
Okay.
In fact, one of the reasons for annual variation you might see is just improved reporting.
Okay.
Particularly think that's likely the case in district courts. As more district courts have only in the last 5 years been switching over from paper reporting, which is every month.
Terrible.
Every month, hopefully, district courts that are operating send us a page report in which they count the number of cases filed, the number of dispositions. Like I say, we try to keep track of who's reporting, you know, diligently and who's not. But as more and more district courts go on to our electronic case management system context, reporting from those areas improves. That means that variations in case counts aren't necessarily a result of the activity underlying, it's reporting that improves.
Yeah, and I would say that this is interesting because we've always known that district courts was where most people have their experience with the court system.
Yes.
And that's shown by this because it's 1 to 10. I mean, it's 100 times what is going on in the circuit courts. But the other thing that I've learned since going off the bench was that in criminal cases, sometimes when the arrest is made, and they're not arrested at a place where they can be put into the criminal registration system, then that case doesn't count. It's not put in to that register.
It doesn't accumulate in ACIC.
Right.
Which means, oh, certainly, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, over the last few years, we've made a concerted effort to try to improve our percentage of cases arrest tracking numbers, ATNs. Just a few years ago, it was probably hovering statewide in the 50-60%, and now it's regularly statewide about 85-87%, so it's improving.
Well, and I know that there's been some support, at least with my work in Pulaski County, to get fingerprinting and the kind of equipment you need for that fingerprinting, not just a fingerprint, but how to get it into the system locally to the ACIC properly.
Yes.
And that took new equipment to do that.
Yeah, it often takes quite a bit of coordination, and particularly in jurisdictions south, east, some to the west and north.
How many district courts are still manual?
Oh, it's...
We're still working.
Manual.
You mean the paper reporting part?
Yes.
It's probably about 35, 30, 40, perhaps.
Well, we should have full-time district judges, what, in 1 year or 2 years?
I think 1 year.
1 year. Yeah. And will that improve that, you think?
I do think that will improve that. And that's another thing you note in the district court caseload is that as more district courts are changed over from local district courts to state district courts, their civil jurisdiction increases. So
right.
That also has an impact on the number of cases they receive.
Well, statistics are always, you know, we just never know what they mean.
Dr. Alden, excuse me, I'm just going to ask this one. All these folks that we've already established in each of these courts are full-time employees. Is that correct? They're all full-time employees.
The clerk's offices?
Yeah.
Trial court administrators, yes. Yeah. And the judges, except for some district court judges. And that's a diminishing number are not full-time.
District judges. We've got a few part-time.
Yeah,
district.
Just yeah, a few. In other words, the vast majority of them are
oh,
full-time.
Yeah, the majority of
paid
the majority of the in all right. in all the courts are full-time. The only ones that are not are a diminishing number of district court local judges.
Thank you.
Some of these circuits are huge.
Geographically?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, the
second.
First, second, third are 5-6 counties.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because the populations are more dispersed.
Right, it's a rural area.
Right, yeah. Which often means that the judges in those areas have significant travel responsibilities as well, compared with, say, like the 22nd or the 23rd, which are one county.
Well, and Pulaski County.
And Pulaski yeah. just two, yeah, so much more compact.
And that's not changing in...
No, I don't think so.
Based upon the census.
No, I don't think so.
I don't have any more questions tonight. If any of you please, speak this, up.
This is just a personal question. Would it surprise you, I come from the original practice of law from the first district, Craighead, Crittenden, all of us. Would it surprise you to know that that district is still, it's actually one county larger, and they still, circuit judges will travel as far north as Piggott and Corning, and as far south as the south end of Crittenden County?
That would not surprise me. About a year ago, I did an analysis of travel reimbursement for the circuit court judges to try to get a sense of how much time judges were committed, and that area was an outlier in terms of travel reimbursement.
What'd you call it?
An outlier. The substantially okay. larger travel responsibilities on their part, and I try to estimate distance by working backwards, how much they were paid, and then going to the GSA mileage rate, and calculating backwards to distance. And yes, so based on that, no, I would not be surprised.
Outlier would have, I like that description. Thank you very much. We appreciate your time and attendance. Anybody else?
Thank you for gathering this information.
Have any other questions? All right. Thank you, sir.
If you have any additional questions, please feel free to contact me.
Thank you.
If you don't have my email address, I don't have the card, unfortunately. But
we know where to find you.
We know where to find you.
You do, actually.
Thank you.
Over there.
You're welcome to stay, or you can leave if you wish.
I believe I'll leave. I need to join the
fine. All right, hold on, lost my. This is a commission discussion of duties and full benefits afforded by law for president pro temp and senators. Is there anybody here that's specifically here for the Senate? Item F, full discussion of duties and benefits afforded by law for Speaker of the House and House members. Roy, thank you very much. Would you come join us? You gave us a document first, and we've passed it out to everybody else. Mr. Johnson, nice to see you. Would you, Roy, would you refresh the commission? We've got one new member here today, who you are and what you do, and same thing for you, Mr. Johnson.
Chair, not.
You can come closer, better chair. You.
I'm Roy Ragland, Chief of Staff for the House of Representatives.
I'm Buddy Johnson. I'm parliamentarian and coordinator of legislative services for the House of Representatives.
Gentlemen, welcome. If you would, just go ahead, and I don't think anybody has any direct questions to start, but just go ahead and visit with us some about what we're interested in hearing, and we'll take it from there. Is that all right? You can refer to that document anytime you want, Roy.
Well, as far as the duties, of course, the Speaker of the House is first of all a member of the House of Representatives, one of the 100 members, and he is elected by that body, or she is elected by that body to be the presiding officer over the sessions and to handle other duties as they arise, including the staff and travel and meetings and coordinating with the governor, coordinating with the Senate pro tem. So those primarily are the duties, in addition to represent his constituents. So you know, he has the same privileges as any other member, but he has those additional duties, which causes, I guess you could say, him to have to be here in the Capitol much more than the average member. So anyhow, that's of course, he's from El Dorado, like your Mr. Smith, and so it's quite a drive up here. So it's an additional burden on him to, when he does have to. But other than that, of course, the members of the legislature, having been one, there are several aspects. It's more than just being a legislator. You're a state representative, so you have, currently we have about 30,000 constituents, and you represent those people to their state government. And that could be anything from helping with driver's license, to taxes, to anything that deals with the state government, and or you end up being a liaison to the federal or the congressional delegation as well. Then you're lawmakers. You have also have oversight then of all the state agencies, their performance. Then the unique thing about legislators is they're the ones that hold the purse strings, so no money can be spent in the state of Arkansas except to be appropriated by the legislature. So they're appropriators, they're legislators, they're representatives, and they're overseers. So all four of those aspects come into being a state representative. So that's why we have committee meetings during the interim through the Arkansas Legislative Council. So those meetings cover all areas of state government, reviewing contracts, reviewing personnel matters, all of that. That's why the meetings are in the interim. And we also have meetings where some of the standing committees will meet jointly. So we might have House Education and Senate Education meeting, House Public Health, Welfare, and Labor meeting with the Senate, their Senate colleagues, about issues that are coming up, things that are come up during a session that are not resolved or sometimes put into what's called interim studies. And those issues are studied during the interim with a view of being dealt with in the next regular session. So there's all kinds of reasons why that they're having to meet. I'd also say that we have the Bureau of Legislative Audit, so 1 week during the month, on a Thursday and Friday, they meet with subcommittees, educational institutions, cities and counties, and state agencies. They have those three subcommittees that review the audit findings and reports from the Bureau of Legislative Audit. So they review those. So they meet generally once a month during the interim. Legislative Council on another week will meet, and their subcommittees meet during the week. About two sessions ago, Speaker Shepherd and Pro Tem of the Senate came together and said, we want to try to be more efficient in these meetings. And so they said the last week of the month, we're not going to have any meetings. We want that. We want to compact those meetings. We may have two subcommittees of the Legislative Council meeting during one day. And some people may be members of both of those committees. So rather than those people having to make two trips, they would just meet maybe in the morning and the afternoon, and that saves them the trip from El Dorado or from Bentonville or Jonesboro or wherever it is. It saves them that expense, and it saves the state from having to reimburse for that expense. So we've actually moved toward efficiency in those meetings. Now that was in 18 and 19. Of course, in 20, COVID come along, yeah. And just kind of, we're talking about outliers. I would say that 2020 and 2021 have been outliers in two different directions. In 2020, our meetings were almost non-existent. We had to meet in the physical session. We really abbreviated that session. We had a three-day special session. And so our meeting time was drastically reduced in 2020 because of COVID. Inversely, because of COVID, in 2021, we ended up having a very long session, and then we had something that we haven't done in the modern era, and that was we took an extended recess and came back into regular session in the fall. And that was because of COVID, in that the Census Bureau was not able to produce the numbers that we needed for congressional redistricting. The legislature is tasked with the congressional redistricting, not their own and not the House or the Senate districts. That's the Board of Reapportionment. But it is the duty of the legislature. Well, you can't do that if you don't have census numbers. Also, the American Recovery Plan Act, we didn't know how much money that Arkansas was going to receive from that. And so because of those two factors, we had to recess and come back in and deal with the appropriations for ARPA and also for the redistricting, which we did September 29th. And several days following that. So that created an issue. We also, the reason we went from January 11th to April the 28th this year was because of the COVID inconveniences that we had to have to make sure that this was still an open session to the public, where that they could come to committee meetings, and we tried to be as open as we could be under those restrictions, and that caused some time delays. Also, we had a week in there where we were at sub-zero blizzard conditions where we couldn't meet. And so that had caused us to have that extended session through that period of time. We had a special session back in August. And we anticipate that we're going to have a special session before the first of the year. So that makes this year an outlier in the inverse of last year, because we've had so many things that have come at us. It's kind of like if you take a week off from work, and when you come back to work, you seem like you've got 3 weeks of work to do. And that's sort of what happened to us in the legislature, is we were off that year as far as meetings. We still met as necessary, but we pared it way down. Then we're having to catch back up with that this year. So as far as trending any direction, I don't think you can use those this year nor last year as saying, well, we're moving in one direction, more meetings or less meetings, because those are outlier years. You'd have to go back to 19. And again, the speaker had instituted and the pro tem a more efficient use of legislative time. So the handout that we have, that we presented, I'm gonna let Buddy, if he will, speak to y'all about the historical context of whether we're meeting more or less or whatever.
Turn on your microphone.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the commission, for the opportunity to be here. The handout that Mr. Raglin was describing is a list of legislative dates. It goes back to 1969. This data is maintained by the Bureau of Legislative Research, and it's published in the legislative summary of action at the end of each regular session. If you look at the last page that is 2000, from the 85th General Assembly through the 93rd General Assembly, the dates of the regular sessions are generally in the 80, 90 day range. Begin second Monday in January, and then just rattle them off: the May 13th, May 1st, May 1st, April 27th, May 17th, and 2013. April 22nd, May 1st, April 24th. And then this one was April 28th. So as you can see, the date range for the regular session is pretty, it's not real dynamic. It's pretty steady. And that, I for a long time thought that was a result of us having bill filing deadlines and this and that. Well, we did away with the bill filing deadlines a few years ago, and the length of the session remained the same. So that kind of worked out. I guess the point is the regular sessions last about as long as it takes for them to get all the work done. And I've seen no indication of a great desire to be up here in session longer than is needed. I've heard, you know, chatter on the street talking about, well, they just won't be in Little Rock for meetings. Well, the record doesn't reflect that at all. As Mr. Raglin said, in 2020, that's a fiscal session year. We traditionally don't meet in session that many days, and we've only had fiscal sessions since 2010. So. The fiscal session last year was greatly abbreviated. In fact, the House of Representatives, we pulled up stakes and moved out to UALR and met in their gymnasium, because this was in April, the beginning of the pandemic. We really weren't sure what was happening, and nobody really was, and we were taking every precaution. imaginable to protect the membership and make sure that we were still able to fulfill the constitutional duty of meeting on a given date and enacting laws as required, and recording all the A's and A's for the journal. And that's a lot of roll calls that we did. Mr. Ragland, you know, verbally called the roll, which with 100 members can be. We gained new appreciation for our electronic voting machine during the time we were at UALR. So I hope these numbers just reveal, the steadiness of the meeting dates of the General Assembly. And as Mr. Ragland mentioned, the part of the legislative work you don't see so much of compared to when we're in session. And then one, I'd like to note that the House of Representatives since 2010 has streamed all the proceedings of the sessions of the committee meetings and in the interim, all that's streamed and available for the public. So that's the visible part of the legislative work. The invisible part is their in their capacity as representing the people, member services. We have the data that Ms. Garrity presented, comparison other states, Arkansas is kind of considered to be a hybrid legislature. It's not full-time like California, Pennsylvania, New York, but neither is it part-time like New Hampshire, New Mexico, Montana, places like that, where those are the spectrum, those are the bookends. We're kind of in the middle. Some states have individual staff for individual members of the legislature. We don't. We have a staff pool that provides multiple services for multiple members of the General Assembly. Our Office of Member Services, for instance, in 2017 had a caseload of more than 6,000 instances of tasks carried out on behalf of members. Those numbers, that's 6,000, 4,600, 3,900, 2020 was almost 6,400, and so far this year, almost 5,300 cases. Then that's our staff doing work for the individual members that we are recording as being done. That does not include the multitude of phone calls and personal encounters that each of these members have with their constituents, both when they're in Little Rock working and when they're at home. So that's kind of the gist of what about the workloads that I see.
Could I ask you this question? And I'm really appreciative that we heard this information. We needed to hear this. And there's no implied trickery to this question. It's just straight, as best I know how. As I listen to this, it speaks to me in terms of not only are you not part-time, but it's almost as if we're de facto or have accidentally moved to where we almost are full-time. Do you share that thought? That's not what I think. That's what I hear people say, that we're no longer a part-time legislature. And I don't know what the truth of the matter is about it. And it's not we're trying to find something here. We're trying to understand right. something here. Because it sounds like you work way beyond
yeah. what I think that when we think of legislators, we're thinking of members that come and make laws. Again, the duties of the state representative are far, far more comprehensive than just being a lawmaker. I don't think we're moving toward being a full-time lawmaking body. I think the duties of a state representative, once they're elected, and I can tell you from having been one for 6 years, it is a full-time job.
Right.
you have to be on call 24/7 to your constituents. So yes, but as the historical record plays out, we're not necessarily meeting any more than we have in recent history. But as far as our, as their duties, yes, it is basically a full-time, because you don't know tomorrow. I mean, you can schedule out, well, for example, right now, we generally know when the special session is going to be, but you can't plan on taking off and going on a Christmas vacation next month, because we don't know when exactly the special session will be, because the constitutional authority to call that is the governor's. So you have to plan your lives around these meetings, whether they're legislative council, whether they're audit, whether they're joint meetings, or whatever they are. And also, you have that constituent issues back home. You may have to go to a quorum court meeting. You may have to go to the school board meeting. You may have to go to the city council meetings, library boards, fire departments, all kinds of things that you have to go to. So as far as saying their duties are not full-time, and yet they have to, they may have a full-time job too. They may be an attorney, they may be a banker, a farmer, a housewife, a school teacher, a superintendent, whatever they might be, then they have to work these duties around those. So it depends on the viewpoint where you're looking at it from, whether it's a full-time legislature, lawmaking, no, but in other duties, they are.
Are there any, this is going to be my last question, and that was good information. We really appreciate your sharing all that with us. Are there benefits by way of retirement or anything, I don't care what it is, that is paid to the House or the Senate by way of benefits, retirement, dental, any of this kind of thing, that would make the legislatures being compensated now as if they were full-time?
Well, members of the legislature are members of APERS, the Arkansas Public Employee Retirement System. If my memory serves me correctly, you have to have 10 years of service to be vested. That was very unfortunate during my day, because I was term limited to 6 years. So there's no way, unless I got elected to the Senate, and then I could serve some time in the Senate. So yes, there are members of the APERS, and so there is a retirement. It could be based on, like every other state employee, on your three highest years. There are health care benefits that you get, the state employee benefits, just like any other state employee, but they hold out just like they do for all other state employees. So yes, they do have those same benefits that's available, but they're just like any other state employee on that.
Thank you again for your full and thorough information to the commission.
I want to express my appreciation too. As I mentioned earlier, some of us know what we've done, but we don't know what the other constitutional officers are doing. And I really appreciate this meeting date summary. And what I'm seeing here is the distinction you made, Roy, between legislating and duties of a representative. And on this, when you say FES, what does that FES stand for?
That is a acronym for the first extraordinary session.
Okay.
And the SE is the second extraordinary, and I think there's one instance in of a third extraordinary session.
Okay, I just wanted to understand as your lingo. I have many friends who had served in the legislature. And I have yet to understand how you can hold down a full-time job and be a legislator. It is probably the reason some lawyers don't run, because they can't serve their practice and their clients properly. I've heard one recently say, just can't do it. Just not doing either job to the best of their ability. So I guess what I'm asking is, how do these representatives and senators hold down jobs? Do you have a feel for that, or is that just a rhetorical question that there's no answer to?
Well, I think it is. There's 100 different answers in the House of Representatives because we have 100 members.
Yeah.
But you have a very valid point. Our attorneys that are members, it takes away from their practice.
And doctors say
doctors, I know we have a couple of doctors, one emergency room doctor, and he works his schedule around the meetings that he knows he's going to have to be at that week. Farmers, right in January, February, March, and April, when they need to be out feeding cattle, or other, the row crop farmers, they work around their harvest in the fall and planting in the spring. And so teachers, some of them have to take leave of absence for their duties. And it's just each one has to make that decision based on their own
situation.
And child care.
Yeah.
And you just name it. So when you look at these salaries, this is not some exorbitant amount they're getting paid for not doing anything.
Well,
I
was thinking they were underpaid, in my view. But that's my view. I don't speak for the commission, because I think you take a hit in some other areas financially to be a public service. And so I am just very appreciative I kind of knew it, but I think it's important to put it out there also for the public to understand what public service means. So I appreciate you coming forward, and this was not, the reason we asked for this information was because no legislator ever asks for a raise. And we understand why. It's not politically appropriate in many ways. So all we were hearing was the judges asking for their appropriate raise. And I think the commission has a duty to take care of the legislators too, and the senators, where even though they don't ask for it. Because I think it can get really out of whack. Thank you.
Any other questions from any of the other commissioners? All right, gentlemen, once again,
thank
we appreciate you very
thank
much.
Y'all.
All right, let's see. New business. I don't think we have anything else on the agenda that's new or old business.
No. This was more of an informational meeting as opposed to an action meeting.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I don't think there's a vote required on any of this. But as I'd like to repeat what you've already heard, the whole purpose of this. Repeating what you've already heard, the whole purpose of this is, as we discussed here a couple of meetings ago, that we needed to revisit a standard by which we're trying information-wise to make the right decisions about all of these different constituents that come under our duties here as a commission on awarding more or less, or leaving it as it is, whatever is chosen to do.
it's not to try to ferret out whether or not somebody gets more, somebody less today. We're just trying to understand. And I want to repeat to you, if I had it to do over again, I would have thought again myself early in this process to do this the very first year within the first 90 days that we convened this, because it would have been more helpful to us. But having gotten it now, then that puts us in a better position to come into the new year next year when it's time, or maybe if we need to visit again during the special session, I don't know. But I thank you all again for your time and patience and coming this far to listen to what we needed to hear today.
And I want to say, with respect to the other constitutional officers, like the Auditor of State, the Secretary of State, the Lieutenant Governor, I presume their duties are listed out in the statute. Is that correct? Okay. So what I'd like is for us to be provided the statutes with those particular duties listed out. Usually that's the way it's done. And it may be part of it in the Constitution. I'm not sure. I mean, I can go look it up, but I think everybody wants it.
I've got a question. On this particular document, I mean, they reference Arkansas being maybe not full time, but not part time, but hybrid.
Hybrid.
So are these?
Which one is that? Which document are you talking about?
This one.
You're looking at it.
Oh, okay. This is Jody's work. Yeah.
So I guess my question would Iowa, Louisiana, Missouri, Oklahoma, Tennessee, would they be considered hybrid as well, or not?
Well, it's what she was talking about, Ms. Garrity. I don't think we know.
Well, actually, from the discussion that Roy was giving, he listed off real part-time legislators, and none of these were included in the states he
That's true.
Mentioned.
Well, only a few that are full-time. He mentioned those first, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, those that are really part-time, as opposed to hybrid. Looking at their salaries, that's got to be hybrid. You know, it in terms of, I don't know. I mean, I think we could ask Roy, or look at whether these other states, Iowa, Louisiana, Missouri, Oklahoma, Tennessee, are also hybrid, similar to Arkansas.
Is this a matter of record of what we're working with today on this one? I want it to be so they have it and they take it home with them.
Is that what you had us make a copy of?
Yeah. Yeah.
It'll be on the website.
Okay. All right. So that I'm clear on what you're saying, hybrid, you're talking about we're not full time, but we're not really part time either. We're somewhere in the zone, so to speak. I think that's correct. I don't know that I'm fully with you on what you said about these are all hybrid.
I can't say that for sure. I'm just, it wasn't among the ones he mentioned. He said New Mexico is really part-time, you know, that mm-hmm. we were different from New Mexico. But if we could just confirm that whether or not they're hybrid or really part-time.
Yeah, just from a comparative data.
Yeah, right.
I think we can do that, can't we?
Just gonna jump in here.
Yeah.
On the National Conference of State Legislatures, there's a really good map.
Uh-huh.
It's color coded. Green is full time, well paid, large staff.
Yeah.
Gray is hybrid, and gold is part time, low paid, small staff.
So could you tell us if Iowa is gray?
I knew, yeah. These states aren't labeled. They're really testing my knowledge of geography. let me see how I, what shape Iowa is, and then yes, I can tell you that.
Well, Iowa, Louisiana, Missouri.
Yeah, Louisiana is gray, Arkansas is gray.
Okay.
Most of these I know. Iowa's one of those that's kind of in the middle, but okay. I don't know.
So what's gray again?
Missouri is gray.
Well, above Missouri is Iowa.
Yeah. Oklahoma is gray. Tennessee is gray.
Mm-hmm.
And did you say?
Above Missouri.
Above Missouri would be Iowa is also gray. So
okay,
all
so
the
they're
states,
all gray.
Yeah, all the states that we're comparing to.
And what's the gray?
High.
What's gray again?
High.
Okay.
Yes, I just found the list.
Okay.
Iowa is. The majority of them are.
Good question.
Does that satisfy us as to what we need to do? Okay. All right. Any other questions, comments? And adjourn. Very much so. Good to see you. By the way, how did Smackaroo, what are they again? Buckaroo?
Buckaroo,
yeah. How they do this year? Are they doing good?
In football?
Yeah.